Since April of 1985, this is the DX Audio Service, a nonprofit organization devoted to the radio listening hobby.
Thanks, Doc. Welcome to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for May 2009. This is issue number 290. If you'd like to write to us at the DX Audio Service, the address is 706 McKenzie Drive, that's spelled M-A-C-K-E-N-Z-I-E Drive, Lima, Ohio, 45805-1835. Telephone number is 360-382-1957. Email is sales, S-A-L-E-S, at nrcdxas.org. A subscription to the DX Audio Service for U.S. and Canadian members is $28. To Europe and elsewhere, it's $40. Tapes are sent via first-class mail, and you keep your cassettes. To subscribe or renew, make your check payable to the National Radio Club and send them to me at the address that I just mentioned, or log on to our website at www.nrcdxas.org, and you can sign up using our PayPal credit card system. Alternatively, you can sign up to EDXN and get your DX Audio Service on your computer or iPod player in stereo. A subscription to EDXN is only $15. Just point your browser to www.e-dxn.com and subscribe online with our PayPal credit card system, or contact Wayne Heinen at Post Office Box 473-251, Aurora, Colorado 80047-3251, if you want to pay by check. Well, as you can hear, the weather is nice enough that I've taken the old AT4047 microphone out here on the patio, and we're doing the opening on a nice, beautiful Saturday morning, April the 18th. Well, the temperature is 56 degrees, and sunshine outside, 43% humidity, and no winds. The singing of the birds is broken only by the sound of my neighbor's wind chimes, or the occasional engine roar from one of the kids attending the University of Northwestern Ohio, our local auto school. So I'm just sitting here with my coffee and really don't feel like doing much today. But after working on the DX Audio Service, I need to work on my amateur radio antennas, as this is the first good weekend that I've had since November of 2008. So while I get another cup of coffee, let's turn the microphone over to Captain Bill Hale with a look at the AM switch. Bill?
Thanks, Fred, and welcome everyone to the DX Audio Services AM switch for May of 2009. First of all, call letter changes on 810 WBIC Royston, Georgia is now known as WXFO. On 910 WABI, Bangor, Maine has switched one letter in their call sign. They're now known as WAEI. 940 KNNZ, Cedar City, Utah. Their new call is KOBY. 1010 KCPW in Tooele, Utah. Their new call, KPCW, just changing the two middle letters around there. 1100 KKJY, Milan, California. Their new call is KIVA. On 1110 WJSM, Martinsburg, Pennsylvania, their new call is WWBJ. 1140 in North Las Vegas, Nevada, the former KSFN is now KYDZ. 1150 KXMG, Portland, Oregon, their new call KLPM. A new station in Chugiak, Alaska, I believe is how you pronounce it, C-H-U-G-I-A-K is the spelling. Like I said, 1160 on the dial, K-H-F-T is their new call. 1170 W-L-Y-G, Hanceville, Alabama, has made the switch to W-Q-H-C. Another new station, this one on 1220 in Desert Hot Springs, California, they've chosen the call K-J-M-L. 1230 WWGA, Waycross, Georgia, changed their call to WAYX. WEIM, Fitchburg, Massachusetts, on 1280, they've changed to WPKZ. 1320 WPSB, Birmingham, Alabama, their new call is WENN. 1340 WMRK, Selma, Alabama, changed their call to WJAM. The former WJQI on 1370 in Fort Campbell, Kentucky, they've changed to WEGI. Another news station, this one on 1400 in Central Point, Oregon, they've chosen KFJL for a call. 1420 WENN, Tuscaloosa, Alabama, change their call in your logs to WACT. One more news station to report this month, 1430 in Boise, Idaho, they've chosen KCMW as their call sign. 1450 WMAS, Springfield, Massachusetts, their new call WHLL. On 1480 WVSG in Neon, Kentucky, their new call is WGCK. On 1540 in Exeter, New Hampshire, the former WGIP now goes by the call of WXEX. 1590 WONX in Evanston, Illinois, their new call WCGO. We'll have a bit of news about that in just a few minutes. And finally, the call sign changes end with WVVM in 1670 Dry Branch, Georgia, making the switch to WFSM. Well, our next category is construction permits, which have taken the air over the past month. 600 KOGO San Diego, California. They've just changed their designation, their antenna designation, from directional antenna, same pattern all hours, to two different patterns. In reality, there is no actual change to what is now their day and night patterns from what they had, but their designation has changed. So adjust your logbook to read U4 5000 5000. 890 WJTP Lithia Springs, Georgia. They're now on with 5000 watts daytime, non-directional, moving from Walhalla, South Carolina, on 1000 kilohertz. 900 KTIS, Minneapolis, Minnesota. They're now on with 50,000 watts daytime, 500 watts at night. U4, that's two different patterns. 930 WSFZ in Jackson, Mississippi. They're now on with 3,800 watts during the day, 3,100 watts at night, directional nighttime only. That's our designation of U2. Not the singing group, no. It's a directional antenna at night. 990 KATD, Pittsburgh, California. They're now on with 10,000 watts daytime, 5,000 watts at night. U4, that's two different patterns. 990, another station on that frequency, WTIG. I don't know how to pronounce this. M-A-S-S-I-L-L-O-N. Fred, help me out. It's in Ohio. Massillon? Massillon? Oh, well. Maybe you can correct me. They're licensed for U4, 250 watts daytime, 112 watts at night. They've applied for and has been granted a special temporary authority license for U1, get this now, 63 watts during the day, 28 watts at night. They report that one tower of their three-tower array collapsed and they are unable to continue operation as licensed. So until they either repair or replace their array, they'll be operating with these reduced facilities. Oh, by the way, you may be wondering where they come up with these 63 and 28 watts. It's a rule of thumb to operate at one quarter of the licensed power when such catastrophes occur. On 1120 WTWZ Clinton, Mississippi, they're now on with 10,000 watts daytime and 2,500 watts critical hours, non-directional. 1150 KXMG Portland, Oregon, they're now on with 5,000 watts daytime, 10 watts at night, reducing the night power. 1160 WIWA St. Cloud, Florida, they're now on with 2,500 watts during the day, non-directional, 500 watts at night, directional. So their designation is, you're right, U2. 1200 WJES Saluda, South Carolina, they're now on with 10,000 watts during the day, 4 watts at night, 6,100 watts during critical hours, all non-directional. 1240 KNSN San Diego, California, they've reduced their power from a kilowatt day and night to 550 watts day and night, all non-directional. They moved to a taller tower, so they had to reduce the power is what the deal on that one was. 1250 KCST, Florence, Oregon. They're now on with 900 watts daytime, 370 watts at night, all non-directional. 1280 WNAM, Nina Menasha, Wisconsin. Their construction permit for U4, 50,000 watts during the day, 5,000 watts at night, is now on. The new day pattern, the day pattern remains unchanged, favoring the northeast, except for the size. It's quite a bit bigger. 1300 KAZN, Pasadena, California. Their CP is now on for 23,000 watts during the day, 1,000 watts at night. Two different patterns, that's U4. The majority of the power of the new day pattern is thrown to the northwest, along with smaller lobes heading east and southeast. WSOY 1340, Decatur, Illinois. Their CP to move to a new tower is on, while remaining U1, 1,000 watts day and night. Actually, their coverage area has decreased quite a bit because of the difference in the antenna and the location where they move to. 1390 WLCM, Holt, Michigan. They're now on with U4, 970 watts daytime, 4,500 watts at night. Strange operation with quite a bit more power at night than in the daytime. And they've moved from Charlotte, Michigan. And 1430 WATP, Decatur, Georgia. Their CP has been now on 50,000 watts days, 174 watts at night, with a directional antenna during daytime hours only. So their antenna designation is U5. They've increased both day and night power levels and moved up one notch on the dial from 1420. They have added a tower to their array for now a total of four. The new day pattern directs most of the signal toward the south, with a small portion going northeast. 1460 WNPL, Golden Gate, Florida. This new station is now on with 7,000 watts daytime, 2,000 watts at night, two patterns, that's U4. The day pattern throws the majority of power to the south with a smaller lobe to the west. The night pattern directs most of the power due south with smaller lobes to the southeast and southwest. Also on 1460 WPON, Walled Lake, Michigan. They're now on with 670 watts days, 175 watts at night, U4. 1480 WTLO, Somerset, Kentucky. They're now on with 1,000 watts daytime, 27 watts at night, adding that night service. 1480 WCFR, Springfield, Vermont. They're now on with 5,000 daytime watts, 23 watts at night, reducing the night power by a whole watt. I don't know what the effort there is. They must save a lot of electricity. Who knows? 1490 WOLF, Syracuse, New York. This legendary upstate New York station is now licensed as U1, 1,000 days, 1,000 nights. What makes news here is that WOLF had been operating directional during the daytime hours due to signal conflicts with a Canadian station, but now they're non-directional. 1540 WSIV, Syracuse, New York. CP is now on for 1,000 watts days, 57 watts at night, after moving the daytime transmitter to that of the WOLF site, leaving their nighttime transmitter at the old site. 1580 WBCP, Urbana, Illinois. CP is now on for 135 watts daytime, 6 watts at night. Hardly seems worth the effort, doesn't it? But wait till you hear this one. 1580 WTTN, Columbus, Wisconsin. They're now on with 5,000 watts days, 4 watts at night, and 800 watts during critical hours. They've built two new towers, and they've moved their city of license from Watertown. The day pattern is a simple bow-tie figure headed south-southeast and west-northwest. Actually, we don't have a pattern designation for directional days and non-directional nights and critical hours, so U5 will have to do for now. A few minutes ago, we mentioned the call sign change for 1590 in Evanston, Illinois. Well, here's some more data on that one. We promised that. This station, the call sign changes go way back to pre-1979 when they were WLTD. Then for years, a couple of decades or better, they were WONX. Now they've changed to WCGO in Evanston. Well, their company has bought out a couple of 1600s in the Chicago area, one being in Harvard and the other one in Chicago Heights. They've taken those two off the air in order to increase the power for this 1590 station. So here's what we've got. 1590 WCGO in Evanston, Illinois. Their construction permit for 7,000 watts daytime, 2,500 watts at night is now on. They're directional at night only, so that's U2. And they've, like I said, they bought out WCGO 1600 and WMCW in Harvard, and both of those stations obviously have been deleted. Also, if memory serves correctly, there used to be a 1590 or a 1600, I think it was 1590, up in the Milwaukee area, and that's been gone for a few years, and of course that makes this station with a non-directional very viable in that area. They're probably heard up there very well. So that's the latest story on the new WCGO in the Chicagoland area. 1600 KRKE Albuquerque, New Mexico, the construction permit for 10,000 watts days, 175 watts at night, non-directional is on the air. They still have an application for 50,000 watts daytime, and that remains on file at the FCC. And finally, another 1600 station, WPDC, Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania. They're now on with 1,000 watts days, 18 watts at night, doubling the day power, but reducing that night power. They're non-directional. License cancellations and call letters deleted. Three stations owned by one applicant in the West, 540 in Pine Bluffs, Wyoming. They had the call of KJJL. On 780 and 890 in Fountain, Colorado, with KCEG and KJME, respectively. All three of these stations were unbuilt construction permits, all licensed, like we said, to the same applicant. And what happened was their time limit to build had run out, and extensions were applied for, but they were denied. A couple of stations in Canada are now off because the simulcast period with new FM stations has expired. Those two stations are CJRC 1150 in Gatineau, Quebec, and 1490 CFWB in Campbell River, British Columbia. Also canceled 1520 WOLY Battle Creek, Michigan, although I understand they remain on the air. The FCC has refused to renew their license, but they just keep chugging along. Also, the aforementioned WCGO in Chicago Heights, Illinois, now off the air. Some applications for new stations, rather. 890, a new station has been applied for in Olivehurst, California. They've applied for 350 watts days, 250 watts at night, 350 watts critical hours using three different patterns. 1170 in Varadale, Washington, they've applied for 15,000 watts daytime, 1,500 watts at night, 15,000 critical hours, and directional night only. 1340 Rothschild, Wisconsin has applied for 1,000 watts day and night, and 1520 in Fultondale, Alabama has applied for 6,000 watts days, 400 watts at night, two different patterns. Well, a few months ago, we started hearing about some stations that were being simulcast on low-power FM stations. Well, we've got three of those to report, plus one heard on a full-power FM station. The first being 740 KRMG in Tulsa, Oklahoma, is now heard on KRMG 102.3 in Sand Springs, which is the full-power. And the three low-power stations, 1210 WILY Centralia, Illinois, is now heard on W254BE, which is 98.7 in Centralia. 1430 KBRC Mount Vernon, Washington, is now heard on K271AH, which is 102.1 in Kamano, Washington. And 1570 WSCO Appleton, Wisconsin, they're being carried on W237AA, 95.3 in Appleton. One station reported back on the air this past month, that being WNOV 860 in Milwaukee. However, stations off the air, and quite a few of them, KGHT 880 in Sheridan, Arkansas, WALE 990 in Greenville, Rhode Island, KTNS 1060 Oakhurst, California, WDKN 1260 Dixon, Tennessee, KIQQ 1310 Bakersfield, California, three stations on 1340 WFEB Sylacauga, Alabama, WFSH Valparaiso, Niceville, Florida, and WALH Mountain City, Georgia, and 1420 WBUC Buckhannon, West Virginia is off, plus a couple of 1540s KGBC Galveston, Texas, and WKXG Greenwood, Mississippi. Of all the emails I get every month, people seem to be most interested in fines. I don't know why. But this month, $9,000 fine has been assessed to KSJB 600 in Jamestown, North Dakota, for what the FCC says, willfully and repeatedly violating rules concerning their public file documents. Its sister FM station was also hit for the same $9,000 fine. A $3,200 fine has been allocated against WKKX 1600 Wheeling, West Virginia, for what they say willfully violating the commission's rules by broadcasting a live telephone conversation without giving prior notice to the individual being called of the licensee's intention to do so. $9,000 fine, KXMX 1190 Anaheim, California, for failure to properly maintain there. You fill in the blank. That's right, public file. Hey, at least they had one. A $7,200 fine assessed to KUOA 1290 Siloam Springs, Arkansas, for their failure to maintain the public inspection file. That's a bugaboo, isn't it? FCC must be partying big time with all those fines. Well, that's about it for this month. My thanks go out to Bill Dvorak, Sean Axelrod, Wayne Heinen, and Dean McIntyre for supplying tidbits for us to go over this month. And, of course, I thank you for tuning in. Now I turn this DX Audio Service mic over to everybody's favorite, John Bowker. John?
Well, thanks very much, Bill Hale. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Travelogue. You know, I can't remember having so much fun in the last few years, anyway, as I've had here this last week assembling what you're about to hear on today's Travelogue. I ran across a cassette tape of 25 years ago, at least, from Mark Strickert. Now, Mark used to do what Linda and I did for years and years, and that was to make trips across the United States from north to south and east to west. Mark did it a couple of times a year, too, frequently. And his taste in station break recordings is the same as mine. And I had sort of forgotten I had this cassette, I must admit to you. He had assembled a lot of the IDs as he traveled and categorized them into singing jingles and other categories. And what I have today are his singing jingles, at least a very few of them. The first dozen or so IDs you're going to hear here in the next few minutes are all from Mark Strickert. And he had a variety of recorders, the same as I did, so some of them are kind of crisp, some of them are a little muted. But what the heck? Hey, they're all radio stations, all AM and all from the United States. So, what do you say we start way out west, and I don't know if we're going to work our way east or not. I have forgotten the way I assembled them. And some of these stations you haven't heard in years, I predict. We're going to start in Seattle as we begin the May 2009 DX Audio Service Travelogue.
Now back to the gold on all oldies.
KBI, Seattle.
That was from 1982, and Mark's notes show that later, about a week later, after recording that one in Seattle, he visited the state of Missouri and the home of the Bass Pro Shops.
Are you right now in Springfield?
JTTS Springfield.
Now, there's no question but what Mark got around pretty well, but there's also no real evidence that he himself made this following recording.
It's 9 o'clock. Good morning. We're Randall and Cook. On the station, I'll pay you $1,000 for 15 minutes.
KKUA, Honolulu.
Now, here's a little jingle from the station with, at the time, the largest radio audience in the world.
The best music on the best station, WABC, New York.
WABC, standing from the show.
Oh, yes, there was little, if any, question that WABC didn't dominate the New York skyways, no question. And, of course, New York being the largest city, they have the biggest radio audience. And they used to lay claim to that, you can be sure. Many of you who have been with us for years on the audio service know what my favorite singing station break is. Now, in fairness to Mark, he recorded this years before he and I ever met. So I know this wasn't done to jab me a little bit, but here is one of my favorite radio stations, the ID and no jingle. Goodness.
WIBC. Indianapolis.
Well, okay. Now, here is a selection from the jingle package of an all-news station on the West Coast.
KCBS, San Francisco. Report to you, KCBS.
And that station at 740 is not to be confused with this station at 820.
KCBS.
Say, I want to interrupt what I'm doing, this smoothly paced program for you today, because I just ran across two IDs I don't remember ever hearing before. I don't know why. I worked at one time for the NBC station in San Francisco. That was in 1976, by the way. But here across town was the all-news station at 740 on the dial, using a jingle package like this. This recording was made in 1982, and back in 76 they were not using this. Remember now, this is for an all-news station, and you can be sure the announcer was instructed to talk over the music and up to the ID. Yes, next comes the jingle that got me started in this whole recording of station breaks business from 1972. And from right across town.
Hello, Mother! 6 o'clock, Big Ron O'Brien is back at the Voice of Labor!
WCFL Chicago!
You know, you kind of expect the big stations to have learned IDs and expensive jingle packages. But what about the graveyarders like this one in Milwaukee?
Hurry, hurry, scurry, scurry, life is full of work and worry, stop!
Lean back, take it easy, and enjoy.
Wonderful WRIP, Milwaukee.
Now, I always thought this next station was running something of a risk, perhaps with tongue-in-cheek. But now, if you lived on the East Coast, you were familiar with one of the big stations at 660 on the dial and their jingle package. Okay, so now, if you moved to southern Connecticut or even Rhode Island or out on Long Island, tuned to 1600, this is what you heard in 1982.
The flagship station of the East Coast.
Yes, I can agree. You could barely make out what city they were broadcasting from. But they were simulcasting on AM and FM, and my impression is that on the AM side, for some reason, they had the wrong channel, maybe the left channel they should have been using, and they broadcast the right channel of that ID on the AM. Well, maybe, maybe not. Here's another cut to let you know really where they're located.
Now it's new
Well, here's one that doesn't go back quite 25 years, but just a brief pause for nostalgia.
This is WJW, AM 850, Cleveland, Ohio.
And how many of us remember that during the late 60s, the early 70s, in that time frame, there were three big music stations in Chicago? WLS, okay, that dominated, but WCFL, hot on their tail. And what about down at 570?
I'm Chet Douglas, ABC News.
Good morning. Welcome to the Clark Weber Show.
I mentioned a few minutes ago I worked for the NBC station in San Francisco at one time. And here is a recording I made by plugging my cassette machine into the earphone jack in the control room.
If it's happening in the Bay Area or the world, it happens on KNBR San Francisco, your NBC station.
This is the NBC Radio Network. I'm Ann Taylor.
Well, we're going to go back to Mark Strickert now. In 1976, in his report to me, he said he'd been driving across Arizona listening to some very dull radio when this next ID just sprung out of his radio, and he said it was the most beautiful thing. He almost wept.
Radio 1250.
Okay, it's a little hard to identify with that kind of emotion, but I suppose on a hot day with nothing much to do and listening to dull radio, having a nice bright jingle like that could make your day. Let's go out to the ballgame.
Let's pause for station identification. This is the Los Angeles Dodgers Radio Network.
Your sports station for the San Joaquin Valley is KNDE, Visalia.
KNDE. Visalia.
With two down in the second inning, here is Ron Say.
Oh, and look what I just found from 1966. If this station had been using this ID in the early 70s when I started my collection, I never would have started the collection. Now, this next ID really isn't a jingle. It didn't come from Pepper Tanner or Jam or any of the jingle packages. But somebody very inventive, I think, came up with the way this ID is produced.
KILD, that's going to do it for John St. John. I'll see you back right here tomorrow at high noon.
3 o'clock at the Big 610. This is the Boogeyman, Barry King.
KILD, Houston.
We come next to three rapid-fire jingles from radio stations. See if you can figure out why I have them on my hit parade.
CKWX Vancouver, CKWX.
That was number one. Here's number two.
CKLT Vancouver.
And unless I lost track, here's number three.
It's great.
So great to be in the country.
Yes, yes, I know they're all Canadian, but did you notice they're all what we call legal IDs from Canadian stations? Remarkable. Well, that's going to do it for this month. We'll see you next time around, and here's Mark Durenberger.
National Radio Club.
Well, thanks, John. So far in our omnibus report, we've looked at massive dial changes inflicted on the broadcasters as the federal regulators tried to come to grips with the overwhelming demand for frequencies. We also reported a subtle shift on how newly emerging regulations were changing to reflect the wishes of the industry itself. Broadcasters were now viewing their stations as serious investments and potential cash cows. Two major networks, NBC and CBS, spanned the country almost to the West Coast, and huge investments were being made in programming. Stability was the word from the broadcasters, unless their own oxes might be gored. And indeed, there was some adverse reaction from the 1928 General Order 40 that we talked about last month, as stations found themselves with new interference problems. At the same time, there was emerging the newly empowered Class B broadcast group, stations many of which would soon become known as the Class 1A Clear Channels, but much of that remains to be told. Today, we resume our story in about 1930. General Order 40 was honored by most broadcasters, and many changes were made, but there were problems from some conflicting assignments, And while the changes under General Order 40 were expected to be long-lasting, a minor amount of political pressure was being brought to bear by a few stations. And in 1930, additional fine-tuning of assignments began. For most stations, General Order 40 would stay in place until the NARBA realignment of 1941. But, hark, this headline from Radio World, April 19, 1930. 26 stations go on new waves in effect May 1st. Changes in the assignments of 26 broadcasting stations operating on cleared channels, 17 of them licensed for evening operation with high power, were ordered by the Federal Radio Commission to become effective May 1st, 1930, representing the most sweeping revision of station assignments since the general reallocation in November 1928. The changes were ordered with a view of eliminating interference between stations operating on the same channels. It was explained at the time changes were proposed in February that the stations were not to be affected in regard to power or hours, but only as to channel assignments. So here we go again, folks. WAPI went from 1140 to 1130, WBT from 1080 to 1040, WCAU from 1170 to 820, WHAM 1150 to 1160, WHAS Louisville 820 to 1020, WTAM 1070 to 1080, WOWO went from 1160 to 1180, WRVA from 1110 to 1150, WWVA went from 1160 to 1180, KEX in Portland 1180 to 1170, KMOX 1090 to 1110, KOB 1180 to 1170, KRLD in Dallas 1040 to 1070, KSL Salt Lake 1130 to 1190, KTHS in Hot Springs, Arkansas went from 1040 to 1070, KVO in Tulsa 1140 to 1130, KYW in Chicago 1020 to 1140. As you notice, we're slowly sneaking up on the final assignments of 1941, but imagine what these people went through. Not only transmitter retuning and replacement sometimes, but each time they would have to rebuild the antennas for the optimum length. And as you heard, sometimes the changes were quite serious. Fortunately, stations used the flat-top antenna in those days and didn't yet have to worry about adding or subtracting to a long steel vertical tower. But they did have to move their supports, didn't they? By 1930, stations were flourishing on the band from 540 to 1500. The FCC would soon expand the band to 1600, first adding a group of so-called high-fidelity channels, but that remains to be told. Radio News Magazine, a hobbyist-slash-industry trade publication, published its year-end assignment list for 1930 in the March 1931 issue. Frequency and not wavelength was now the standard indicator. In the early days, wavelengths were okay. They were sort of broad assignments for a few channels, but the Federal Radio Commission kept grinding away at the technical problem of keeping stations on a precise frequency. And with the advent of the crystal oscillator, stations could be expected to remain precisely on a given frequency, expressed at the time in kilocycles. So now, with all of these changes, and they weren't the last, to be sure, we come to November 1930, and at this point, with the massive changes out of the way, we start to see how the big stations started to congregate along the lines of frequencies that eventually became known to us as the 1A and 1B channels. In March 1931, Radio News published the complete U.S. broadcast call list, corrected to November 1930. On 640, of course, KFI, WOI in Ames, Iowa was on the air in a secondary operation, as well as WAIU in Columbus, Ohio. 650 now had WSM and KPCB in Seattle, Washington. On 660, WEAF in New York, WAAW in Omaha. 670, WMAQ, the only station on the frequency. 680 had WPTF in Raleigh, KFEQ in St. Joseph, KPO in San Francisco. They're all starting to fall into place here. 700, WLW was the lone tenant. On 710, WOR and KMPC in Beverly Hills. 720, WGN. 740, WSB and KMMJ in Clay Center, Nebraska. 750, the sole home of WJR. 760, WJZ New York, WEW in St. Louis, and KVI in Tacoma. On 770, KFAB and WBBM. On 780, at the time this was a Canadian shared channel, WEAN in Providence, WTAR and WPOR in Norfolk, Virginia, WMC in Memphis, WISJ in Madison, Wisconsin, KELW in Burbank, and KTM in Los Angeles. On 810, WPCH in New York and WCCO in Minneapolis. 820 WHAS, they apparently didn't make the move to 1020 as they were ordered. 830 had WHDH in Boston, WRUF in Gainesville, Florida, and KOA in Denver. 840 at the time was a Canadian exclusive, no stations in the U.S. On 870, WLS in Chicago, as well as WENR in Chicago. On 880, another Canadian shared, we had WGBI in Scranton, also WOAN in Scranton. Meridian, Mississippi had WCOC, Iowa City, Iowa, WSUI, KLX in Oakland, KPOF in Denver, and KFKA in Greeley rounded out 880. 890, another Canadian share, WJAR in Providence, WKAQ in San Juan, Puerto Rico, WMMN in Fairmont, West Virginia. There was WMAZ in Macon, Georgia, WGST in Atlanta, Georgia, WGJF in Little Rock, Arkansas, WILL in Urbana, Illinois, KUSD in Vermilion, South Dakota, and KFNF in Shenandoah, Iowa. 1,000 kilocycles, WHO Des Moines, WOC Davenport, and KFVD in Culver City. On 1020, WRAX in Philadelphia and KYW in Chicago, who also apparently didn't make the proposed move to 1140. 1030, another Canadian exclusive channel. 1040, WMAK in Buffalo, New York, WKAR in East Lansing, KTHS in Hot Springs, Arkansas, as well as KRLD in Dallas. KTHS had not yet made the move to 1070. On 1060, WBAL in Baltimore, WTIC in Hartford, WJAG in Norfolk, Nebraska, and KWJJ in Portland, Oregon. On 1070, Cleveland had WTAM, Carthage, Illinois, WCAZ. WTAM had not yet made the move to 1080. There was also in Illinois in Tuscola, WDZ, as well as KJBS in San Francisco. On 1080, WBT in Charlotte, WCBD in Zion, Illinois, and WMBI in Chicago. WBT had not made the move to 1040. On 1090, KMOX, the only assignment. They had not yet moved to 1110. On 1100, WPG in Atlantic City, WLWL in New York City, and KGDM in Stockton, California. On 1110 kilocycles, WRVA in Richmond and KSOO in Sioux Falls. WRVA had not moved to 1150. 1120 was another Canadian shared, WDEL in Wilmington, Delaware, WDBO in Orlando, Florida, WTAW College Station, Texas, KTRH in Houston, WISN in Milwaukee, WHAD in Milwaukee, KFSG in Los Angeles, and KMCS in Inglewood, California. There was KRSC in Seattle and KFIO in Spokane. On 1130, New York City had WOV. Moose Heart, Illinois was WJJD, and KSL now moved from San Francisco to Salt Lake City, also on 1130. They, too, had not made their move, in this case to 1190, as had been suggested in the previous general order. 1140, WAPI in Birmingham and KVOO in Tulsa. Both were to move to 1130. On 1160, WWVA in Wheeling, West Virginia, and WOWO in Fort Wayne. And you'll recall that they were to move to 1180. On 1170, we had WCAU in Philadelphia and KTNT in Muscatine, Iowa. WCAU had not made the move to 820. 1180 had WDGY in Minneapolis, WHDI in Minneapolis, KEX in Portland, KOB at the time in State College, New Mexico. These last two were to move to 1170. 1190, the sole province of San Antonio's WOAI. 1200 was a Canadian shared at the time. There are about 2 to 3 dozen stations, all low power stations. Remember, this was up the band, as was 1210, also a Canadian shared channel. And then there were the four super regional channels, only three of them occupied at the time. On 1460, WJSV in Washington and KSDP in St. Paul. On 1470, WLAC shared the frequency with KGA. And on 1480, it was WKBW and KFJF. And that left us with 1500. Back then, it was an exclusive U.S. channel. And again, it had a couple of dozen stations of low power. And that, if you recall, was the end of the band in 1930. Relative stability would now reign, and the major broadcasters were pushing for higher and higher power. 50 kilowatts was a practicality. And in our companion report, The State of the Stations, we'll learn about how some of the big operators on the clear channels developed their facilities. The relative calm and regulatory changes that was about to begin meant that broadcasters could now make significant investments in their transmitting plants. And many of the stations built in the early and mid-1930s are still in operation today. The new broadcast networks, which would soon include Mutual, reached almost to the West Coast with their AT&T Long Lines facilities. Humongous investments would be made in programming on the networks, and soon radio news would become a staple, propelled by world events leading up to the Second World War. But all of this is yet to be told, and we're really glad you're still listening. Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service. We'll see you in about a month over most of this same audio service. Until then, good listening, DXers.
At this time, please turn over your tape to side two.
It was great, all right.